have sponsors or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Joyce Riley from the Power Hour. Joyce, how are you?
Well, Dr. Stan, I'm wonderful. Thank you so very much.
Well, of course, Joyce, for those of you who don't know, does a program on Genesis early every morning. And, of course, you can hear her regularly on the satellite that's at RadioLiberty.com. And she's on there on our satellite feed 9 hours a day. So you'll certainly want to listen to Joyce because she's always up to date with so many of the things that are going on. And, Joyce, what are we going to talk about today?
Well, Dr. Stan, since Memorial Day was just so recent, I'd like to discuss not only my feelings about Memorial Day, but the concerns that I think a lot of people have, the idea that we are venerating and supporting and honoring dead soldiers, and that that is the mechanism with which the U.S. government honors people is after they've died. They can't do anything else, really, at that point, and that seems to be the most, well, human thing to do, is to honor them after they've died. And so I think every parent hopes that that has lost a son or daughter in the military kind of hopes that they're able to see their child on Fox News or on one of the television stations, which is so sad because that's all that is left for them. And though I think that's fine and okay, but what we're doing, though, is not taking care of those that are sick. We're not taking care of them while they're in the war, be it depleted uranium or whatever you want to call it. And instead, we're just honoring them after they die. And it's kind of like the book that was written, Waiting for an Army to Die. And I think that's what's happening. I'd like to just discuss this situation that happened with the one staff sergeant that killed five during the in Baghdad, Iraq, or Balad, I believe it was, Iraq, Camp Liberty. And I think this story needs to be told, but it hasn't been told. People haven't heard it, and you'll notice that they kind of shut it down after it happened. I mean, when one soldier, a staff sergeant, who is 44 years old from Sherman, Texas, a lifelong soldier, kills five of his men or five men that he was serving with, you would think it would get a little bit more attention. But they wanted this quieted down. They didn't really want any focus on this, and we really don't even know what happened during that time other than the man went in, they said, in a clinic and mowed down five people. Well, the man who did this killing, the accused killer, is Staff Sergeant Michael Russell, 44, of Sherman, Texas. He was a system support signal specialist, and he joined the National Guard back in the 80s. Then he transferred to the active army in 94. He was deployed to Serbia from June to December of 96. And then to Bosnia after that. Then he began his Iraq deployments, and he's had, I believe, three of those. He was assigned to a 54th Engineer Battalion in Germany, and it's interesting because the two Army Commendation Medals he received, the two Army Achievement Medals, four Army Good Conduct Medals, two National Defense Service Medals, and then on and on. But I think it's interesting that he got so many Good Conduct Medals. So what went wrong? Well, the military doesn't know. They're still looking at it. But I don't know what you heard about this, but many people did not hear that he killed a psychiatrist there, a Navy commander psychiatrist, Charles Springle of Wilmington, North Carolina. He killed Major, a physician, Dr. Matthew Houseal. He was a psychiatrist also. He killed Staff Sergeant, one Staff Sergeant, a specialist, and another PFC. But the interesting thing is that all these people were not involved in the work there, these last three. They were involved in being patients at the clinic.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Joyce Riley. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Joyce Riley with the Power Hour, and she's talking about this tragic incident that occurred recently over in Iraq where a staff sergeant went into some sort of a medical facility and killed a psychiatrist and another medical officer and three other people who were just visiting there. Here's a man who was on his third deployment in Iraq. He was in his 40s. He suddenly had been in the military for good period of time in the regular military since 1994. He was on his third deployment in Iraq. But the question is, why would he have done this? This is totally illogical. He'd have to know he'd be caught. What had happened to him that caused him to do something like that? So you pick up the story, Joyce.
Well, I think we have to look at the fact that if he was on his third tour in Iraq, he had probably gotten a considerable amount of depleted uranium. Now, whether or not this was a neurological issue, I don't know. PTSD, we really don't know. But what we do know is that he had been referred to counseling. They had already taken his weapon away, and they sent him to the stress clinic there at Camp Liberty. Well, inside, when he was inside there, for some unknown reason, the staff asked him to leave, which angered him. Now, a lot of times when these guys go into the clinics and try to get support and help and assistance, they're told, you're not bad enough. Are you suicidal? And they say no. Then they say, well, then leave, and you come back whenever, you know, we can get an appointment for you. Well, it made him angry for whatever reason. He was told, after he was told to leave the clinic, he left the clinic and he later returned, but this time he had a weapon with him. And he is accused of opening fire with that weapon, killing four soldiers and the naval officer. He was detained immediately after the shooting and charged with five counts of murder and one count of aggravated assault. So he is still alive, which is unusual for many of these shooters. As you all know, when they do a shooting, they end up killing themselves. But he was 12 months into his third deployment there in Iraq. Now, that's a long, long time, 12 months into his third deployment. So if he was there 12 months, normally a deployment is about 12 months, you know, how long did they plan for him to be there? And with three tours, that is an amazingly long time to be deployed. He had been to the combat stress clinic before. They said he was undergoing testing there, and the counselors broke him, whatever that means, broke him, according to his father. Well, anyway, preliminary reports then showed that the suspected shooter was unarmed when he was escorted to the combat clinic at Camp Liberty, but inside the clinic he got into a verbal altercation with the staff. He was asked to leave. Then he...
Hold that thought, Joyce. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Joyce was just saying that this staff sergeant who committed the murders had actually been into counseling. His father had made some remark that they had broken him, whatever that means. But under any circumstances, he was asked to leave the clinic that day. He was becoming unruly. He had returned then with a gun, and picked up the story there.
Well, they escorted him out in a vehicle, in a military vehicle, and he grabbed the escort's weapon while he was driving him. He got command of the vehicle. He then went back to Camp Liberty to the clinic there, which was called the Liberty Combat Stress Control Center, that provided mental health care to the deployed troops there. And that's when he went in and killed the psychiatrist, who was a father of six, by the way, from Amarillo, Texas, and a Navy commander that was assigned there, and then the three enlisted guys. Now, the three enlisted guys were in various types of operations. One was in a chemical operations unit. He was a chemical operations specialist. Another one was an engineer, and another one was, I can't recall. He was a, he was a scout in the military. So they were being treated in the clinic at the time. He went in and he just allegedly opened fire on all these troops. Well, now the case is being investigated, of course, many times over, and they say they're trying to get to the bottom of what happened there. Well, there was enough, I think, spectators there, that witnesses that saw this, that they ought to be able to figure out what had happened. But many times we never hear because they don't want us to know or because there was something else going on and it was bad for PR. But at the same time, though, we've got these massive numbers of troops that are mentally unstable. In fact, I've been told, and I think we talked about this before, as many as 30% of the troops have now been placed on some type of drug, and I'm talking about either a sleep drug or a psychotropic drug to handle their stress, allegedly to handle their stress. And you've got 30% of these people that are taking these drugs and carrying weapons, which is not a good combination. I don't care, you know, who they are. And so they've had so many people that are so sick in the military, they had to start what's called the Army's Wounded Warrior Program. And they've decided to make an entire command to take care of wounded soldiers. They're responsible for all the wounded soldiers and their families from the point of being wounded until the time that they leave. And they say now they're going to have this new thing where they're going to have a plan for every soldier. All the things that they should have had all along. I mean, this is what every hospital did before, is have a plan of care, and they're just now getting around to doing it for all these wounded soldiers. So what has happened is the system's overloaded. You've got over 20,000 soldiers now that are wounded and cannot either return to duty, that are either lingering in some type of retired or semi-retired position, medically retired position. 20,000 of them. So the vets are very upset about the care they're getting. They're either not allowed into the hospitals because they want only the amputees and the people with the serious battle injuries in there, or they have to go to some of the VA facilities, and a lot of them don't like those because they're not given the kind of care that they deserve there. They're seen by interns and or some type of student there. So the vets are very upset about the military care that they're getting. Now, all of this is leading up to this frustration, this anger, and this what they want to refer to as PTSD. But we all know that it's not necessarily PTSD. What it is some form of either neurological or organic problem that they've developed, and the military doesn't want to address it. Because if they do, then they'd have to do something about it. So, as we've talked before, their whole goal is to try and diagnose them with something that occurred prior to their coming into the military. They have to find some type of depression, some type of somatoform disorder or behavioral disorder that they can blame it on prior to their joining the military. Now, I was reading one of the regulations the other day about the taking of certain drugs prior to coming into the military. You're not allowed to take any of the SSRI drugs for at least 1 year, and that puts you on a waiver list, even if you've had it 1 year ago, for an SSRI drug. Ritalin also, I believe, excludes some people from the military. So you come in on a waiver, but, if you have people with a known history, why you put them in the military with a gun and under all this kind of stress, I don't know. But that's what they're doing. And then they're even putting these people on more drugs once they join the military. Well, now they've got a problem with what to do with all these people that can't serve anymore. I mean, they're just burnt out. I mean, even if they did not have any depleted uranium poisoning, the very fact that they've been over there three times, have faced that horrific environment three times, and literally are having your family stressed to no end. I mean, anybody who's deployed before knows that deployment is very difficult on the families. And now these guys, many of them the guardsmen, are not being paid what they were being paid in their real jobs at home. So let's say, like for instance, when I was a flight nurse in the military, I did not get paid what I got paid as a heart transplant nurse. So when I took off January to June of 1991 and I served as a flight nurse, I wasn't working my regular job, so I was not getting my real pay, my heart transplant nurse pay. I was having to take less pay. Now, the sad part is your bills are the same. Your mortgage is the same. Everything you owe is the same, but you just don't have the same income. Well, that's what's happening to these troops. They're overseas. Their wives are having to deal with less money at home, so they're having to take jobs. Their families are falling apart. They're going on food stamps because they are not getting paid what they got paid in their regular job in the civilian sector. The military just doesn't normally pay as much. Even, I was a captain, and it still didn't pay as much as I got paid as a heart transplant nurse. So now they're losing their homes. Foreclosures are taking place in huge, unbelievable numbers. These people are depressed. They're having to take Ambien to sleep, and they're given it by the bucketfuls of medicine. In fact, I talked to somebody who has just been up to Rolling Thunder this past weekend in Washington, D.C., and they said that these guys brought garbage bags full of their medication, of the bottles of medication. I mean, they put them in a big black plastic garbage bag. They had so many different meds they had to take. And it's not unusual for them to be on 15 or 20 meds because they get GI problems, gastrointestinal problems, so they're taking a drug there. They may have a heart arrhythmia, so they're taking something there. They've got high blood pressure, many, many, many of them, so they're taking those drugs. Diuretics, whatever. But it, and then their sleeping medications, and then their SSRI drugs or their antipsychotic drugs. And they're just on, and then there's statin drugs because they're developing, and that's one of the things we're seeing in combination that is not a good thing, it appears, is SSRI drugs and the statin drugs. So now, where do they go? They've got no place really to come back to because their jobs have been filled a long time ago. You can only be gone so long from your job, and it's going to not be there. I mean, people today are losing their jobs here, let alone those that are overseas and have to come back to no job. They've lost their houses. The wives have lost the houses. The wives have gone to work. Many times they've started having relationships outside the marriage. And it's just horrific. Then you end up with the suicides. You end up with the homicides. So you've got the neurological problems on top of the PTSD problems, on top of the financial problems, on top of the marital problems, on top of losing their families. And that's what happens. Well, now the government is trying to get ready with what we call, or what they're calling, the Youth Corps. They're getting ready to take on the Youth Corps, or put the military has-beens, if you want to call it that, those that have left the military because they're leaving in droves right now, and they're going to put them into this unit called Youth Corps. And I think it's going to be, unfortunately, Hitlerian style kind of group. I'm not very happy about it. I'm not very at all appreciative of the fact that they would take them and put them into this kind of a survival skill, survival training kind of network here in the United States. But I think that's what we're going to be seeing is putting these people into some area where they can be protected. Or not protected, but at least given a job because they can't really function. And they've got hair trigger tempers. Well, what do? You've got them in this one group of called the Youth Corps. But that seems to be one of the things that they are wanting to do. Now, at the same time, we've got these other killings that are taking place in this country. And if we could go back and just recall that man on the Greyhound bus. Everybody, I think, remembered last July that there was this man that was on a Greyhound bus in, I think it was in Winnipeg, Canada, but it was in Canada. And he just began killing people aboard the bus and decapitated one person. Well, this is a story that we didn't hear much about afterwards. It's a story of a man that I think we're probably not going to hear what happened because it seems to me that this might be some kind of Manchurian candidate. I saw this man on TV, and he was sort of talking as if nothing had happened. I don't think he really understood what had happened. But now they're wanting to keep this information sort of secured and bound up so that people don't find out what happened to this man or what the story was in this man. And I think that's really sad because what we need to do is start exposing these killers, exposing the drugs that they've been taking, and what brought them to the point that they're at. But that's the sad part is we don't hear that anymore. When you hear all these stories about these veterans that have killed someone, they never, because they say they can't, under the rules now, the privacy rules, they can't disclose what drugs they were taking.
Or maybe they just don't want us to know what drugs they were taking. We'll be back in just a moment with Joyce Riley. Well, Joyce, you know the things you're saying. I don't know if you've ever interviewed any people on the Black Awakening, but there are a lot of people who are victims of satanic childhood abuse or CIA ritual abuse, efforts to create dissociative personalities. We've interviewed several people who've gone into this, some of the doctors who take care of them. And there really are people out there who've been programmed for violence. They're the Manchurian candidates you're talking about. And if you haven't ever talked to Russ Dizdar or Doug Rigg or Dr. Colin Powell, who's Colin Ross down in Houston, it's a fascinating story. And, of course, they're talking about, you know, the time they are programmed for violence, and when the order is given, there's going to be an outbreak of violence in this country like we have never seen.
I don't think there's any question about it. Yeah, Colin Ross, he is a... I wish he'd go a little bit further in what he says. He kind of goes up to a point and then he stops.
Well, of course, he's trying to maintain his position as a psychiatrist,
yeah.
But I think he knows a lot more than he's saying. But he,
I know. But don't you want to just get inside their head and say, tell me everything you know?
Well, basically, we do have a couple of other people. I'll get you the names and numbers off the telephone. But certainly, my interviews with Doug Rigg were putting together a four-tape set called The Dark Awakening, which will give people an idea that there really are people out there who have been specifically programmed for just the sort of things you're talking about. We can't let the American people know that, say, for instance, Ted Kaczynski, remember the Unabomber? He was a product of a government program at Harvard University. They took him in, played games with his mind, destroyed everything he believed in, and he ends up as the Unabomber. There's a book written about it, and most people have never heard of it. But, of course, there are an awful lot of people out there who are the victims of this sort of thing. And every time anybody begins to talk about it, why, the CIA comes up with a great new organization like the False Memory Syndrome. These people are just imagining it's all imaginary. And, of course, everything points to the fact that the False Memory Syndrome was actually a CIA front organization to actually conceal the CIA's involvement in some of these macabre mind games that they've been playing with children that have been taken from their families and used for terrible, terrible things.
Yes, and I Russ Dizdar, you mentioned him. He is such an amazing person who has been working in these cults, and I just have so much respect for him and for his information. But he is a very unique individual. I'm very impressed with him. You know, all we have to do is look at today. What happened this morning? First thing on the news. What's the big story about Iraq? Pakistan, excuse me, Lahore, Pakistan, is that we had this amazing entrance of a van. The van goes up to the police department. Three guys jump out. Then the van goes into the buildings, and all these people are killed. Well, I don't know about you, but I tend to think that a lot of these are created situations, as we talked about, like in the first Gulf War. I think they have to create this dissension, because if you read the Daily PK, Pakistan Daily, that's amazing what they are saying. Those people over there are like those of us here that are screaming, why don't you guys see the truth? I mean, they were talking about the 9/11. Doesn't anybody see what really happened on 9/11? That's the DailyPK.com. Then they were talking about the fact that the U.S. is setting up Pakistan for a war, is trying to make it look like the Taliban are the bad guys there. And here we have this driver pulling this van into this police department.
Hold your thought there. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, Joyce talked a little bit about the Manchurian candidates. Those of you who really would like to know more about that, of course, there is a book on Ted Kaczynski. Remember the Unabomber? And he was actually, had been worked on, they worked on his mind with the government program when he was at Harvard, and they destroyed everything he believed in, and then, of course, we end up with Ted Kaczynski, the evil Unabomber, and he was. He was killing a lot of people. There's a whole book written about it, and we have interviews all going into the background of that. But the American people aren't supposed to know about it. Then, of course, there's a man named Russ Dizdar. I've interviewed him. Joyce has interviewed him. And he works with a lot of survivors of both satanic and CIA ritual abuse, and of course the two of them overlap a great deal because there really are people involved with the CIA who are involved with child molestation in an effort to create dissociative personalities, and certain Dr. Colin Ross works with that. And then Joyce was talking about, of course, what's going on in Pakistan, and the fact that if you read the Pakistani newspapers, they're pointing out that the United States is setting Pakistan up for a war. Of course, we've been saying that for a long time, that we're planning on a war with Pakistan, which is why we allowed the transfer of the nuclear technology to this backward country country, and nobody's ever asked, how could a backward country like Pakistan come up with these sophisticated material and mechanism and technology to create a nuclear bomb? Well, it all came from the United States. That's a Sybil Edmonds story. But Joyce is just saying that a lot of people over in Pakistan understand what's going on. It's such a shame the American people don't understand what's going on. So you pick up the story, Joyce.
Well, I just think it's pretty clear, though, that they're trying to create this, it's the Taliban situation, when in reality, the Taliban is obviously controlled and created by our CIA. All you have to do is look at Afghanistan, talking about the poppies now. The heroin production is huge. It's better than it's ever been. Well, you know, we must have been doing something right over there because we're creating the best poppies they've ever had. And you look at the fact that the United States now says that we're going to be sending another number of troops. They just sent 28,000 over. We're going to have a total of 60,000 troops in Afghanistan now. Along with that, they're now saying, well, gee, we don't think we can bring our troops home, so they got to stay another 10 years in Iraq.
Right, yeah. Isn't that amazing? President Obama ran on the promise he was going to get our troops out of Iraq, but now he's changed his mind. We're just going to have to leave them there. And he wants to protect our medical privacy by putting our medical records on the Internet, and he's going to balance the budget by increasing spending and go right ahead.
What more could we want? And he's just defying everything he said he was going to do. Well, now he's building up Afghanistan at a time when supposedly we're going to be building down, we're building up in these areas. So 60,000 troops, then with another 130,000 in Iraq, I mean, we've got a total of, and I would say probably closer to 200,000 right now, then if you put all the mercenaries on top of that, you've got probably 1 million people over there that are invested in this war with all these military bases now. I don't know whether there's 17 or 22 of them, but with all of these military bases, this war is a business. That's how they make their money now.
And, Chris, the thing is that we can't let the American people know that we never intended to take our home troops back. In fact, you know, the reason for going into Iraq was because we wanted to keep our troops stationed there permanently, but we couldn't tell the American people that. We had to tell them, oh, terrible Saddam Hussein, weapons of mass destruction. Saddam Hussein is going to hurt our finances by, you know, not using the American dollar as a reserve currency. We had to have an excuse to give to the American people, we had to go to war, but they've never told us the real reason, and that's why we want to occupy that country, like we're occupying Germany today, like we're occupying Japan, like we're occupying South Korea. Why do we still have troops stationed in Japan 60 years after the Second World War ended? Nobody ever wants to ask that question.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And then, talking about Afghanistan, of course, recently, General McKiernan was abruptly fired from his position over there and replaced with Lieutenant General Stan McChrystal. And I'll talk about Stan McChrystal in just a second. But General David McKiernan was in charge of a dual command of U.S. forces Afghanistan and a coalition of 42 NATO operations over there in 251,000 square miles. Huge operation in Afghanistan. And this mission that was so huge over there, he got fired, and the new guy coming on is getting rewarded for some bad deeds that he did earlier.
And I think that we will never win the war in Afghanistan, but they don't intend to win the war any more than they intended to win the war in Vietnam or intended to win the war in Korea. It's just fighting a war. And, of course, bankrupting America. We're having to borrow several billion dollars a day just to pay our bills. And so what are we going to do? Expand the war. Doesn't that make sense? Well, Joyce, you go right ahead.
Well, I just wanted to say that this General McChrystal that they're replacing McKiernan with, Lieutenant General or three-star General Stan McChrystal, is Well, he's been had some, of course, some serious high-level operations in the Joint Special Operations Command. But the one thing that I think that he's getting this head of the Afghanistan Command position for is because he was one of the key people that was responsible for covering up the friendly fire incident with that football player.
Katilman, I mean, well, and his family still thinks he was murdered. There were three closely placed bullet holes in his forehead. The doctor who examined him, you know, for the Army, the pathologist said, this is obviously a case of murder. But, you know, they refused to investigate it. I mean, how could you possibly have had these three bullet holes very closely placed together in his forehead, and nobody ever talks about that?
That's true, and I do think that McChrystal is really being rewarded because he kept a secret. He didn't divulge what happened. He got them through the Pat Tillman incident, friendly fire incident, and I think that's what he's being rewarded for now by being given the Afghanistan command. So, you know, if you don't tell where the bodies are buried, then you get rewarded later on. I don't care whether it was because you served in the Reagan administration or the Clinton administration and you didn't disclose the bodies, then you usually get rewarded later on. But there's so much that is happening in the military in the way of murders right now, of homicides, suicides, of incidents that just make no sense, that I think that the military is coming apart at the seams. I really do. I think that there has been such a strong reaction to the anthrax vaccine that they never expected would happen. I think that started bringing some problem among the troops. And I think that the PTSD issue, not taking care of the troops after they leave the military, the stress from all of these long-term deployments, I think the military is at a breaking point. I think they've had it. I think they want just peace. They want rest. You know, they're tired of fighting wars all the time. You know, there's always probably some new incident that they're having to go investigate, and they're not getting any support. I mean, let's think about, who do we have for coalition forces right now? England's bringing all theirs home at the end of the summer, as I understand, or maybe by June. I don't recall.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Joyce Riley, and she was just saying that we're having real problems. England is pulling their troops out of Iraq. They're going to bring them home. They're not going to send their boys over there into a meat grinder in a battle that we're never going to try to win. It's all simply, you know, in fact, this thing never would have happened if it hadn't been that they wanted it to happen, and no sooner had America won the battle back in 2003 than they sailed Paul Bremer over, who works for Henry Kissinger, and he immediately disbands the Iraqi army and then disbands the Iraqi police force, and then he disbands the Iraqi civil service. There's no water or electricity, and then he closes down all the factories so there are no jobs for the people, and then he closes the schools, and he tries to close the hospitals, and he wants to create chaos, and he accomplishes just what he set out, and now we've got a chaotic situation. We can't let our troops come home. They've got to stay there, and so then we've got to train. We've got to create an Iraqi army, so it takes us years to train an Iraqi army to replace the one that Paul Bremer disbanded. Does this make any sense? Or maybe it makes a lot of sense if you understand that we never intended to leave Iraq. We had to have an excuse to stay. Well, anyway, right now, of course, our guest is Joyce Riley. And Joyce, before we go on, I want you to get your webpage out there and tell people how they can hear your program, The Power Hour.
Well, thank you very much. PowerHour.com, or you can go to GulfWarVets.com, which is one of the most viewed websites for veterans, especially the Gulf War. GulfWarVets.com, ThePowerHour.com. You can listen on 7.490 on the internet. You listen on the internet, 7.490, of course, on shortwave, or you can listen on Global Star, which Todd is just the most outstanding person, and I just love him and love their service there, and how they keep this program up every single day. And if people don't have Rick's satellite, they need to get it. But I do need to tell you that we just got word. We called Rick's satellite office because we gave away some satellite systems to some people that were very deserving that couldn't afford them. And we called the office to find out what our bill was today, and his wife had a recorded message that said that Rick has had emergency surgery. They will not be in the office all this week, and to keep them in your prayers. So I'd like for everybody to keep Rick in your prayers. He is one of the most incredible guys that I have ever known. He treats all of our listeners with such respect and helps them out so much. So if we could remember him, I don't know anything about what he went into emergency surgery for, but he certainly does deserve our prayers.
And for those who don't know, basically, of course, this is a satellite, and Joyce and I are both on it. It's Soundwave 2000, and it's inexpensive. I think it's $169 for the satellite and the dish, and Rick has always helped the people, get that set up, and we've got people all across the country who actually, for one reason or another, prefer that to the satellite, to having the internet or shortwave. So it's another means by which you can listen to Joyce's program, the Power Hour, and Chuck Chrismeyer, Pastor Butch, and of course the Radio Liberty programming. That's through Rick's satellite, and I'm so sorry to hear that he has had an illness, because he's certainly a gentleman. He's always been very gracious with me as well.
Yes, he really is incredible, so we'll just remember him. Going back to Afghanistan, the Taliban, the recent news that came out that they found all of these weapons in the hands of the Taliban, and lo and behold, they were American weapons. Oh, my goodness, how could this have happened? Well, I don't think you or I have to question that, because we've been arming our enemy since day one so that we can have an enemy. Because if we didn't arm them, they'd be throwing rocks over there. So we have to give them the weapons to fight us back so that we can keep the war going, because that's what it's all about. But this whole charade, this wag-the-dog scenario, is just getting so convoluted now that it's hard to remember back when there wasn't a second war with Iraq and there wasn't a war with Afghanistan. And pretty soon we'll probably not be able to remember when there was not a war with Iran. But I think the whole thing is contrived. I don't know. I'd like your opinion on what you think about Iran, but there's something very strange going on in Iran. Do you have any ideas? Do you think we're going to be going to war with them?
I fear that we probably are, but I don't know when it's going to be. I think that we're going to war with Pakistan. And, of course, we've told our listeners many times, the United States State Department allowed the transfer of the nuclear technology and nuclear equipment to Pakistan. That's how they were able to build their bomb. That's a Civil Edmund story. And anybody who hasn't, of course, read my January 2008 newsletter, State Secrets, needs to get it. You can get it on the internet. That, of course, and look up Sybil Edmonds, you'll find everybody in the world knows that we have been transferring nuclear technology to Pakistan all the time. Our officials were saying, oh, we can't allow the dissemination of nuclear bombs. This would be a terrible thing. We've got to control the dissemination of nuclear technology. All the time we were actually transferring it to Pakistan that was transferring it to Iran. This is where Iran got the know-how, how to build a bomb, and probably many of the other things that they're using today to enrich the uranium so they can have a bomb as well. But we can't let the American people know that. And it's the old adage, Joyce, you got to have an armed enemy before you can have a war. And I fear the next war is going to be a nuclear war.
Yes, and we spent so much time, of course, arming the Middle Eastern countries so that we could have a good war over there with Iraq, the first one in 1991. We started selling them weapons in 1983 to make sure we could have this really good war. Well, we got one going with Iraq and Iran, and that was a pretty good one, and we just kind of sat back and waited to see who was going to win that one so we could find out who was going to be our best buddy. But then we started arming the rest of the Middle Eastern area. Well, now it, of course, is turning out that this whole issue with North Korea, and now we get into another little war we just might need to be concerned about. But North Korea, ABB, the company ABB, provided the light water reactors to them in the year 2000, thanks to Donald Rumsfeld, who greased the chute for that after the Clinton administration. Clinton didn't quite get it done, so Rumsfeld picked up the ball, given the fact that there really is only one party and they operate in unison. They just decided to go ahead and continue that little job and getting the light water reactor parts to North Korea, or the light water reactors to North Korea. But they said, oh, they can't be used for nuclear weaponry. Well, the guy who helped to work with them said, excuse me, oh, yes, they can. That's what they're for. They're to be, they could be used for that or for the other reason, the commercial civilian reason. But obviously now we've got Donald Rumsfeld in the middle. Probably, I'm sure right now, he's peddling weapons somewhere in some country. I mean, it's not as if he just went off and got on the golf course and said, oh, I'm done now. No, he was back in the Reagan administration. Then he stayed alive because, you know, he never told where the bodies were buried. So he got rewarded with more positions and more positions. And, of course, we know that he was with G.D. Searle. He was always sort of there during the problem times to get Monsanto's aspartame through. That he was there with Gilead Sciences later on. And he's just always been on the forefront of something that had a lot of money at stake and the country needed to get it done. And he was the guy that sort of did it. Well, now, what are we doing? We're looking at a war with North Korea. Maybe, I don't know. What they're talking in terms, and this morning on the news, they said declaration of war. Well, they're just talking in terms of a declaration of war. Now, is this to sort of get us sort of into the understanding that that might happen? It's just kind of an insidious way of getting us to start thinking about another war or what?
Well, you know, Joyce, it's very interesting. You've been watching television the last few days while we saw the, you know, the parade that they had in North Korea, and they've got all these missiles, you know, and of course we don't know if they're missiles or not. They sort of look like a missile, but they're parading them up and down the streets. People have forgotten who has been giving humanitarian aid to North Korea. We've given to a tremendous amount of humanitarian aid and food and rice and oil and all sorts of things. You're building the nuclear plants for North Korea. Why would we do that? I mean, didn't we know that they were communists and you couldn't trust them? Of course we did. They would have crumbled long ago if we had not been financing them. It's sort of like Mugabe in Zimbabwe. You know, we say, well, terrible it is. Why, my goodness, he's a tyrant. And then we continue providing humanitarian aid to keep him in power so he can keep his military oppressing the people. We're doing the same thing with North Korea. We don't know how much humanitarian aid we've given. We know that through the years and through most of the Bush administration, they were giving large amounts of humanitarian aid to the North Koreans. Why would you want to finance such a ruthless, crazy dictator? Unless, of course, you were creating the best enemy money could buy.
That's exactly right. And today, Russia is now warning, and they're now saying that they are taking security measures because they are concerned that there's going to be a war with North Korea. Well, China, they have a little bit of a vested interest here in North Korea because they're on the border there. So, you know, they're seeing North Korea as their little puppet. And what I, you know what I think is so amazing? And I've been just listening to you and I talk here, Dr. Stan. You and I don't talk but maybe once or twice a month. We don't share news. We don't get together on the news. But you and I are right in sync with our interpretation of everything that's going on. And it's not like we're reading anything that's telling us that. There's something in our spirit, something in our minds that has told us or is telling us what's really going on here. Because you and I watch the same CNN, but we come away with different meanings. But you and I are pretty much the same. And that's the way that a lot of the people that listen to your radio show and my radio show is that they have developed this sixth sense of knowing what's going on. I don't know. What do you credit that to?
Well, I've been at this for 47 years. I've made so many mistakes in the past. You know, I even supported the Vietnam War for a time until I realized that we weren't trying to win it. It took me a long time to figure out that the Vietnam War was as phony as a $3 bill. 58,000 courageous American boys were sent over there to fight and bleed and suffer and die in a war we never were allowed to win. They were never allowed to win. So eventually, after seeing that and beginning to realize that we financed communism for so many years in Russia, and remembering all those parades with the missiles in Red Square and saying, oh, communism's the enemy, and now we're seeing the same thing with North Korea. Oh, the North Koreans are the enemy. eventually, you know, if you don't learn something after 47 years, you're in trouble. So I think that the reason I look at what things is because I understand that most of what we've been told is wrong. We were always told that communism was the enemy, and yet it had been financed by people here in the United States for many years, and they even admitted that. There was a man named Lincoln Bloomfield who said, you know, if the communist threat was to disappear, why, how could we possibly continue, you know, our efforts to move towards the one world government? We need an enemy so we can have the people support the government, so we can move to do away with our freedom and establish the world government. And so basically I think that people who've been around long enough, and I'm just hoping that the people who listen to my program and your program will understand, they won't have to make all the mistakes I've made in the past, and they can go on from here and they can interpret the things that are going on. And you know what's so rewarding, Joyce, is that we do an open line program every Wednesday evening when we have people call in. It's amazing how many of the people who listen really do understand what's going on.
Oh, yes. And, you know, I just have to credit all the studying that you've done and all the work that you've done, and maybe that's why I can come along years later and figure this stuff out, is because of people like you that have been around and Phyllis Coe and the other people who have been there for us. But, you know, I have to think, though, that you, as an orthopedic surgeon, and you've done all this work, figured all these things out, understand when you see the news what it means, why don't other orthopedic surgeons do this also?
Well,
what is it that we were given? Maybe we were given a hunger. Maybe we were given a desire to want to know the truth. I don't know what it is, but I'm grateful that I have it, because I wouldn't want to be any other way right now. I would not want to be out there not knowing what's going on. It's just like you're waiting, you know, you see a train coming down the track, and it's going to hit two people that are walking in the tracks. Now, do you risk offending them and hurting their feelings by letting them know a train is coming? Or you tell them a train is coming and save their lives? And that's kind of the way I think of it, is that I don't care if I offend anybody. And I'm talking about by speaking the truth, is that I have to do that. You know, we found out that that pastor that was holding prayer meetings in San Diego has been told by the city of San Diego that if they say amen, invoke the Lord's name, or I can't remember what the other things were. Sing praises, I believe, was one of them. That they can no longer hold meetings there. And that's how they were interrogated. Do you use the Lord's name? Do you say amen to your meetings, during your meetings? And they were told they cannot have Bible study. Did we ever think in this country we would ever hear that you cannot hold private Bible study in your home?
But I think, Joyce, people have to realize that there is a satanic movement in America. It works at the highest levels of our government. That's why they took God and prayer and the Ten Commandments out of our schools. There really are people who hate the Lord, Jesus Christ, you know, and once you understand that, so much of what's going on makes sense. This is why, you know, our young people today, you know, most of them are in favor of homosexual marriage. Even if they're heterosexual, they don't understand that there's a satanic force working within the homosexual movement that wants to kill the homosexuals. The worst thing in the world for the homosexuals is to tell them that it's perfectly normal. One in three lesbians is going to get breast cancer. When was the last time you read that in the paper? That so many of them die of breast cancer. Why they get that, I really don't know, but we know these are the statistics. The male homosexuals die so much earlier. They are being set up to be killed, and if you care about them, you're going to say, what you're doing is wrong. And yet, what are we doing in our schools today? We're indoctrinating our youth that homosexuality is perfectly normal. And the reason for that is, I believe, there is a strong spiritual force of rebellion against God in this lifestyle.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, for anybody out there that, I don't know, this is a time that if you've never read your Bible, if you haven't read it in years, you know, last weekend I got out all the old hymns and the old songs. They remind me so much of being at prayer meetings and Sunday night church meetings. And I just immersed myself in that through the entire weekend. And I will tell you, it was the greatest comfort. The group on Saturday nights on TV, the singing group, Christian singing group, I can't think of their name right now, that begins with G. Anyway, they are just so amazing, and I love listening to them. And we have to give ourselves back that. We need to take that in. Because if we don't, we are going to be so frustrated, hurt, angry, scared. And we have to realize there's a whole scripture there just for our taking. And it's so comforting to have that.
Well, as we often say, you know, we have to recognize we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. There's a spiritual blindness out there, and what we're trying to do is break through that as best we can. You know, but I tell the people what's going on. I figure if God wants them to hear, they're going to hear. And I believe that, of course, the one hope for America is going to be a great revival. I'm looking for that person who's going to lead it. I haven't seen him yet, but that's in God's hands, not mine. We're going to be back in just a moment with Joyce Riley to wrap up the program right here at Radio Liberty. Well, Joyce, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Wow. If I could say anything to people, it would be that I'm not fearful right now. You know, I believe in the Serenity Prayer, which is a great, great source of support to me. You know, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. Accept the things I cannot change. Now, I do a lot of things to try to change things. And I want God to give me the courage to change the things that I can and the wisdom to know the difference. And that's my job. And I don't have to be responsible for the outcome. And that's a really good feeling for me. I am not responsible for the outcome. I'm responsible for doing the next right thing. And with that, that gives me such ability to sleep at night. And I just hope that everybody listening to this program has a form of spiritual support or someone they can go to. And it's not necessarily going to be a church. I used to believe that it was only going to be the church. But it's not now. I have some friends that we do home church with, and it's a wonderful, very, very good experience. And people can do this. If they don't feel like they want to go to a church, they can have a home church. But now is the time to get a good spiritual foundation, because we're going to be tried. We are going to need this. We are going to want this when the times come and they get really, really tough, because there are things tougher than not having food. And I just realize that we're coming into some very difficult times. I don't know if the Manchurian candidates are going to be unleashed. I don't know if the military, there's going to be a group of them that are going to be Manchurian candidates. I don't know. All I know is that I'm going to do the next right thing, sir. And I just thank you so much for the opportunity to be on your show tonight.
Well, I appreciate having you, and we'll look forward to talking to you on the, I guess it's the fourth Wednesday of next month. God bless you.
Right.
Thanks very much for being with us.
God bless. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, I do hope our listeners out there enjoy our conversation, and of course we're having Joyce with us on the fourth Wednesday of every month. Of course, you can mark that down in your calendar, and we're trying to get people who have something really worthwhile to say here on a regular basis on the program. And so we have certainly Larry Pratt the first Wednesday, and we have Catherine Albrecht, Dr. Catherine Albrecht, the second, and Tom DeWeese will be with us on the third Wednesday, and Joyce Riley on the fourth Wednesday. These are all people who have important information that you need to know. There's nobody who's more on top of what's going on as far as the veterans is concerned than Joyce Riley, and certainly we appreciate her willingness to come on, and we appreciate so much her friendship and her support for my ministry through the years as we've supported hers. And so certainly you'll certainly want to think about getting some of the material from the Power Hour or GulfWarVets.com. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and certainly we hope you enjoyed our conversation with Joyce Riley. And she shares with me the belief that this is a spiritual battle. And along that line, just let me mention that we have a great DVD which people need to get. It's on the shack. It's this book that sold 6 million copies. It's been at the top of the New York Times bestseller for 50 weeks. I think it's now down to point number 2. But you want to understand that this is designed to destroy your faith in our Lord. That's the title of the DVD is The Death of Discernment. The Death of Discernment, The Shack. And you can simply ask for The Shack, but if the title is The Death of Discernment, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. To understand The Shack, in fact, one of my best, somebody very close to me had actually sent me a copy of The Shack, that she didn't understand the message there, which is aimed at destroying our faith in the Scriptures and the validity of the Scriptures. It's an emotional story, the shack, which will touch your heart, but it'll also destroy your very soul. Then, of course, we do carry the DVDs by Pastor Billy Crone on the final countdown, which will help you to understand the prophetic things that are happening today. That's the final countdown. You can get part one, part two, or get them both together at reduced cost. We have a Pastor Billy's own personal testimony, Get a Life. That's Get a Life. And then is a four CD set on RFID identification. Believe me, it's here. They're moving towards. Everybody will, of course, carry a mark of one sort or another. And then, of course, we simply want to point out some of the things that Joyce has put out. She's put out a DVD on Beyond Treason. It goes into the background of the depleted uranium that's being used over in Iraq, that's poisoning our young boys that were over there. And this may have an impact on their minds as well, because the depleted uranium does go to their brains. We have a great DVD by Dr. Garth Nicholson, Vaccines and Brain Development, because, of course, the aluminum that's in the vaccines and the mercury that's in so many of the vaccines that are given to our troops. Oh, yes, they give our troops mercury. That's in the influenza shot they're required to take. And they know, of course, how toxic it is, especially to the brain. But the brain and, the Vaccines and Brain Development by Garth Nicholson, Dr. Garth Nicholson, is excellent. We finally have my DVD available, Financial Armageddon. We've had to put the PowerPoint presentation on it. But there's information there that you'll not get elsewhere. Who is a Barack Obama? How did he become the president? Why is it that the government keeps talking about how they're going to do everything they can to correct the financial problem and nothing gets done and more people are losing their homes every month? Is that happening by accident? You want to see the talk on the financial Armageddon? You want to get the syllabus that goes with that, or to get the two of them together at a reduced price? And there's things in that syllabus you will never see elsewhere. That is the Financial Armageddon DVD. And the syllabus, you can get them separately or together. And then, of course, we have a four-tape set on the Gulf War Syndrome. We have a four-tape set on something called Vaccine A. It was an experimental vaccine that was given during the first Gulf War that destroyed the lives of so many of our soldiers, and so many of them not only have been permanently ill, or so many of them have died from it, but you're not going to hear about that. Almost, well, as of a year ago, January, 80,000 of the Gulf War veterans from the first Gulf War were dead. No, or according to the Veterans Administration, no longer living. We actually have their report. You're never going to hear this mentioned in the media. I mean, you know, they couldn't let you know the truth, but that report is available through Radio Liberty. That's the report on the Gulf War veterans and how many of them died. And remember, these were young people who went off to fight about 18 years ago. And now so many of them are dead, almost 80,000, are no longer living. That's a nice way for saying they're dead. That's how government bureaucrats talk. Well, I number 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, RadioLiberty.com. Go there. Read our newsletters. Watch our DVDs. And certainly listen to our radio programs. Encourage others to. And please pray for Radio Liberty.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
IRN USA Radio News, I'm Hope Duggar. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton says there will likely be consequences for North Korea resulting from its nuclear and missile test earlier this week.
It continues to act in a provocative and belligerent manner toward its neighbors. There are consequences to such actions.
Speaking at the State Department, Clinton reaffirmed America's commitments to its allies, South Korea and Japan. She added she hopes North Korea's leaders will return to six-party talks on halting its nuclear activities. North Korea warned of a military response after South Korea joined an anti-proliferation exercise, which could allow it to search the North Ship.